Jefferson just gave an excellent introduction to this, and it's all right if he went a few minutes over, because I've got a few less slides than he does. But we'll make it work. What we're going to talk about today is, in Wisconsin, we've taken the MRTN approach to end guidelines. And I realized when I was putting this talk together last week that when I submitted the title, I have recommendations in there. We have actually changed all of our recommendation bulletin so that it's a guideline bulletin from that same reasoning that Emerson had talked about. So with that, we'll kind of get into the use of soil yield potential and our NRATE guidelines in Wisconsin. They were actually used, soil yield potential was used prior to 1981 in making our N recommendations. Then it moved away from 81 to 91. There was a period where it was a yield goal based approach. And then in 1991, and this was based on a bunch of newer data and data analysis, went to making NRATE guidelines based on nitrogen response functions. And that information is documented in the several Venati and Bundy publications in the mid-90s. And soil yield potential was used with that as a way to kind of categorize some of the soils and the responses. And then beginning in 2006, we officially switched our guidelines over to the MRTN approach, and we kept with our soil yield potential. So it's kind of been a history of Wisconsin for a while. So the question then is, what is soil yield potential? It is not a yield level. That's one of the biggest things that we have problems with growers understanding, is they think that if they have a high yield potential soil, that means that they're going to get, you know, 200 bushels all the time or something like that. It's not tied to a yield level per se. It's based on a soil series description. And we look at the water holding capacity, soil drainage class and internal drainage, depth of the root zone, and then the length of the growing season. And if you think about it, all those particular parameters that we're looking at are things that can limit your soil's productivity. And that's really the best way to think about this, and how it was described in the Venati and Bundy paper, is that soil yield potential is a qualitative assessment of soil productivity. And I actually think we should probably get rid of the name soil yield potential altogether and call it soil productivity. We'd have fewer problems with our producers in understanding it. So if we move on then to look at kind of our yield potential categories, we have two or four categories depending on how you look at it. We technically have a high and a very high category, but they're lumped together as one. And those tend to be our southern and eastern silt loam soils with very little limitations on them as far as any of the, you know, the drainage or depth of or growing season length. Now, we have a medium and low yield potential soils. They are grouped together. And what kind of gets put into this category are our sandy soils. We have a large acreage of sandy soils in the central part of the state, and then some in northwestern Wisconsin. You know, they're there because they have low water holding capacity. Our northern silt loam soils, they tend to, in addition to being in central and northern Wisconsin and having a shorter growing season, they also, a lot of them have poor internal drainage. And that is really limits the productivity of the soil. And then we have another group of soils that are shallow soils. And they tend to be in the southern portion of the state or on the west side near the Mississippi, where we have shallow depth of bedrock. It's like a lust cap over top of dolomitic limestone. Or we have a lust cap over top sandy material. So both of those situations, you have low water holding capacity and can be very droughty in the middle of the season. Now, because we've got situations where we've got the shallow soils, and that's the limitation to productivity, if those tend to be the medium and low yield potential soils, but if they are irrigated, then that kicks them into a high yield potential because we're removing their limitation of to productivity. So to give you a map here of Wisconsin, this is the approximate location of our soil groups, okay? Now I just changed some terms. Some of you may have seen this before. This map is, we've got five mineral soil groups in Wisconsin. We just letter them A through E. Actually, this white here on the E should be yellow. That corresponds there. And that is our central sand area, all the yellow and sands up in here. And here are our soils that tend to be our highest yield potentials are in the southern and eastern part of the state. This black line kind of going through the middle there, that represents 2,300 growing degree days. And that's kind of separating out the soils that are north and are kind of cold and have a short growing season. Now it's important to note that for soil yield potentials, we can have soils down here in the southern portion of the state that are in the same group. So say they're in that blue color, but they can have, some can have a high yield potential and others can be a medium yield potential because of the limitations down there. But almost no soil that is up above the 2,300 growing degree day line is going to have a high or very high yield potential category. So this is our setup, and if you happen to be familiar with the NRCS's major land resource area maps, our soil groups here look very similar. And this, the groups themselves are kind of, while they're originally set up in the 50s for P and K subsoil fertility, they really are more of a marker for the genesis and morphology of those soils. Now if we get into soil-specific N response, there was some really nice work done, and it's summarized in the Vanati and Bundy papers, where there was 24 years of N response experiments at our Lancaster research station. And they took and categorized those 24 years. They separated it into 12 high-yielding years and 12 low-yielding years. And then they kind of looked at that data set. And they found that the average economic optimum N rate, or EONR, was similar whether it was a high-yielding year or a low-yielding year. And then even though the different yield levels achieved were different. And they also found that the average yield was not correlated to EONR, just as Scott and Emerson showed us. And then looking at that delta yield concept, that there was no difference in delta yield either. That delta yield was robust. We could have the same, about the same number of bushel increase whether it was a high-yielding year or a low-yielding year. And then they found that the yield levels were related to rainfall. Okay, so what this is getting at is there's a robustness in a particular field that year in and year out, while there may be some variability, but the economic optimum N rate is fairly stable. And the yield level achieved is related to rainfall. So that kind of gets back to our soil productivity groups. If we're a lot of that's based on the ability of the soil to hold water or get rid of excess water. So in the next paper related to this, they then took and looked at more soils. Because from the previous slide, you could say, okay, well, we need to just run around the state and do N response experiments everywhere and get our database. Well, that'd be a little laborious, probably. So looking at some select groups, now these are also all soils here listed on the left that have extensive acreage in the state. We have our five mineral soil groups represented. We have three here in the top that are, you know, A, B, and C group. Then we have a D group and another A group. And this is a good example here that you can have a group A soil that has a very high yield potential soil and one that's a medium yield potential. And then we have in the bottom our plain field. This is a sandy soil and is normally considered low yield potential, except it's irrigated. So then we consider it high. So they summarized in this paper a bunch of data going back a number of years and kind of looking at the responses and characterized the EONR at on each of these soil types. And they found for the Plano, Fayette, and then the Manawa and Kewaunee, about 180 kilos of N per hectare was the EONR. And they were all the high or very high yield potential soils. If you move to the medium yield potential soils, two different soil series had fairly similar EONRs. So there seemed to be some differentiation there between the soil yield potential groups. But then we move down here and we look at that plain field sand. And it's supposed to be a high yield potential because we irrigate it, but its EONR is 231 kilos per hectare. That's quite a bit more than our high yield potential soils. So that suggests that the responsiveness of sand when it's to nitrogen when it's irrigated is much greater, and that needs to be a separate group. So we've kind of have gone that way so that we have high and very high yield potentials as one category, medium and low as another, And then irrigated sands is kind of a third group. And this graph kind of shows this very nicely. This is using the data, kind of summary data, from what's in our current MRTN data set. So some of these sites would go as far back and overlap with some of the sites in the Vinati and Bundy work, and some of them are much newer. And we don't go back as far as date-wise as some of the Vinati and Bundy work. But if we look here, we have nitrogen rate on the x-axis and grain yield on the y. And this is specifically just looking at corn following corn, no other previous crop involved. The blue dashed line is our very high and high yield potential soils here. The arrow and the number represent the economic optimum N rate for that. If we look at our medium and low yield potential soils here in the red, we can see very distinctly that we have different EONRs for those. And the shape of those curves is different as well. And then we look at that irrigated sand in black, and you can see it is extremely responsive. And it definitely shows us that you need to have that as a separate group if we're going to be separating out soils. So this kind of graph here, I think, says it all. I probably could have just put this graph up and just use that to talk about the whole time, I think, because it really says that when we're using MRTN, as Emerson said, it's kind of a lumping approach, but there's so much variability. Maybe it handled the having enough data sets with enough variety of weather years and fields, we do a good job with the MRTN. But if we can fine-tune a little bit by knowing that we have fields that have different types of response functions, we can refine it a little bit more. So how does our N-rate guidelines look with the soil yield potential? So this next one here is kind of a little bit busy table here. We've got over here on the left the soil and previous crop, and then here we have the N to corn price ratio. So 2.8 kilos of N per megagram of grain, that's the very favorable price ratio. In English units, that's the 0.05 price ratio. And moving up to 11.2 or a 0.2 price ratio, fairly unfavorable. And if we just focus here on the yellow color for our medium and high, or sorry, our very high yield potential soils, we've got two rows. We've got corn following corn and corn following forage legumes, veg legumes, and green manures. And why we have them all lumped together is, you know, as Emerson was saying, you know, ideally if we had enough data, we would have a separate line for corn following first year alfalfa, corn following second year alfalfa. Well, we don't have a lot of data, and plus corn following first year alfalfa, that's pretty much going to be zero most of the way across that table anyway. So we kind of lump it and we tell them to take their N credits there. And then we have soybean and small grains on the same line because most of the response function for corn following wheat is very similar to corn following soybean. And if the medium yield potential soils is set up very similar. So if we look here at a very favorable price ratio for corn after corn, we're looking at a MRTN rate of 185 kilos per hectare with a range of about 60 kilos in the profitable range. And if we move to that unfavorable price ratio, we have we're moved down to 118 kilos per hectare, so we lose about, or we say to put on about 60 kilos less N as you become very unfavorable price ratios. And the range of the MRTN, the profitability, shrinks down in size as well. And if we contrast that, and we look down here at the medium yield potential soils, we have about 50 kilos less on the recommendation. And then the range is narrower as well on some of that. So it's totally related to the shape of those curves, as you saw in the last slide, that the curves are shaped very differently. So of course that's going to compress or expand the range of the economics depending on the shape of the curve. And if we look at our irrigated sandy soils, we can see that though we'll move from 240 kilos down to 213, when we go from favorable to not so favorable price ratio. But what's really interesting is if we look at the MRTN range, while the range shifts down as well, the width of the range stays about the same. It's about, you know, 25 kilos. And when you think about how steep that curve was and the way it looked at the top, as you move it down, it's still keeping that same increments around the top there. Now, our non-irrigated sands and loamy sands, if you look at that, those numbers in that row are the same as corn after corn on the low-yield potential soils, because that's what they are. However, we don't really have a whole lot of data in here, and they might actually behave a little bit differently as far as being really poorly. And we're just starting to actually get data on non-irrigated sands. I mean, from a research standpoint, you probably don't want to spend a whole lot of time and money putting plots out on non-irrigated sand knowing that you're going to get skunked most of the time. But we did it in 2006, and I think we got about 30 bushels of corn, and there was no response to N. And but if it had rained more, we might have gotten a pretty nice response. So this is kind of our current setup, and it seems to be working out pretty well. The biggest challenges that we've been having with growers is, you know, getting them to think about reducing the rates and to match the economics. And they're getting more used to that. I think the when they start seeing how much it's costing them per ton of fertilizer, they're really considering this more. And we've had good acceptance by some. I mean, we've had several growers that have actually, you know, been doing this now for at least a year or a little bit more. So, and we're slowly winning over our fertilizer dealers. It's taken a little bit of time with those guys. Right, Howard? So, can soil yield potential be used in other states? Well, I do think it can be used, but it's going to take some effort. Because right now in Wisconsin, in our fertilizer guideline bulletin, we have over 700 soils mapped in the state. Now, maybe some states don't have quite as much the diversity that we do, but that's a lot of soils to have to go through and look at every profile description. But we can think about other things. Here's the MLRA map for the four states that have adopted MRTN. There's some similarities in soils, and we can maybe think about things. If we look at this big MLRA 103 that cuts through Minnesota and Iowa, you know, there can be reasons why they're not going to potentially have the same yield potential from north to south, because it's a lot warmer in Ames, Iowa than it is in St. Cloud, Minnesota when you're at the extremes of that range. And there might be some other growing degree day cutoffs between there, kind of like we have within Wisconsin. And then important to note, and Emerson had known this as well, you know, Illinois is breaking the state up into northern, central, and southern. And probably down here in the southern part, that's where all their clay pans are, they may have, you know, yield potential limitations because of drainage issues like we do in northern Wisconsin. So kind of in conclusion, the soil yield potentials are really a qualitative estimate, but they can help us classify N response for our crop, and then they can really help fine-tune our N rates with that. And what's, I think, important is if we started lumping a little more than we should, we maybe are telling people to over-apply N, and costing them a little bit money, but environmentally is very sensitive as well, particularly if we were lumping all those irrigated sands in with our high-yield potential soils, we'd probably be telling people to put on a little more N than they should on most of those silt loams. And I do think it's got a lot of potential for use in other areas as well, but it would take some thinking about how you wanted to subset your data. So if there's any time,
yeah, we have 10 questions.
I'll take a question or two.
Any questions? Okay, let's
take
our speaker.
Thank you.